Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lit Radio podcast. I'm Thea, and today I'm joined by Erik Korsvik Ostergaard to talk about his latest book, Anticipatory Leadership: How Leaders Can Use Futures Thinking Inside Their Organizations to Shape Their Structures, Cultures, and Governance. Erik is a renowned futures thinker who explores and evaluates current and upcoming trends within the future of work. He co-founded the leadership advisory company Good Morning April, which helps leaders to design and build the workplace of the future. Erik is the author of two other business books, The Responsive Leader and Two Dots in an Orange World. Anticipatory leadership brings futures literacy, futures thinking, and strategic foresight into play in the tactical world of organizational change management to support leaders and organizations in activating their agency as change makers. Well, hello, Erik. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on the Lit Radio podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. I look forward to our conversation. I have so much to tell about anticipatory leadership and the book. So let's get started on that.
Absolutely. And I'm also looking forward to it. So my first question to you is, why did you decide to write the book, Anticipatory Leadership?
Yeah, it's interesting because the whole area that we're talking about, which is applied futures thinking, to me, first, it was actually more of a solution looking for a problem, which is an odd way to frame it. But I have been fascinated by the future for so many years, both when it comes to work and technology. And then I stumbled upon futures thinking as a domain. And I sensed immediately that there is something to this. But fumbling around with it and learning how to use it, I was actually looking for where to apply it in the best proper way. And all of a sudden, I took all of the tools from futures thinking and I moved them inside the organization. And that's where I found a proper problem where I could apply this. So my decision to write this was to give these leaders who struggle with navigating the world right now a field guide on how to do that. So it was written for people who look for scenarios of the future, people who listen for the trends and the signal around them in order to drive change, not from where they are, but from where they want to go to. And that's why I decided, this might be a nice follow-up to my first two books, which was about leadership and organizational design. So this third is a continuation of that work of looking at the future of work, but designing the future of work from the future. And that's why I decided to write it.
Very interesting. And I have a lot of questions to ask you about the book content.
That's good.
But before we do that, because this is a podcast that sometimes people who want to write a book listen to. So could you share with us what was the writing process for you for that specific book?
Yeah, actually, it was the same writing process that I have used for the two previous ones. There are many ways to write books. The way I do it, I have written each of the books in 4 months. That's what it takes for me to write a book. I always start by finding out, first of all, what's the problem that I solve, and we just talked about. Second, I describe the persona that I'm writing to. Who am I actually writing to? And to be very detailed about what level of education do they have? What experience? Where do they work in an organization? The reason for me is that I can focus my writing to that person and not be too detailed or too vague. So having a persona that I write to, then I start with the end. I know that my writing will end up in either leadership advisory and workshops or with presentations and keynotes. So from that, I calculate backwards. So what is needed when it comes to visuals or drawings or illustrations? And then I start writing. And the way that I write, I use the Pomodoro technique. So I work for 25 minutes and then I have a break, and 25 minutes and then I have a break. And I can do that for on a day I can work 4 hours, and in a day I can write between 1,000 and 1,500 words that are useful. So that's just how I do it, and that might differ, but that's my approach.
Well, great. I think that's really interesting insights for everyone who might be thinking of writing a book. It sounds really helpful, to be honest. But all right, so now I'll move our conversation to the content of the book and your key messages. So could you tell me what is the problem with the way that leaders are currently leading their organizations? Why do you think they should be looking in the future?
Yeah, so many of the leaders that I work with, they have a lot to do. They physically have back-to-back calendars. They have a rather short-sighted or mid-term focus on execution. They have a sense of a lot of things going on around them that are putting pressure on them, both for thinking and executing. So many of the people that I work with, they design their activities based on that kind of, whoa, there's a lot of things going on. And they are designing their strategy based on where they are and looking at history and saying, okay, we can have more of what we just did, just better, faster, or cheaper, or higher quality. Very few of them actually have the time to think and be strategic or be tactical even. Some few of them have that kind of mental bandwidth to jump into thinking mode or design mode. They think short term, they are risk averse. So, and they need to balance this paradox between, at one hand, being a very people-friendly and human leader, and in the other end, being capable of doing strategy or tactics. And that's what I see. They make all of their, well, or many of their decisions are made based on that kind of immense pressure and strategizing from where they are. And I want to give them an alternative to that, to say, what if we started strategizing from the future? What if we started listening to what's going on around us when we make ideas of where we want to go, the preferred or the plausible scenarios? That's what I see going on.
Absolutely, very interesting. But how do you define futures thinking and futures literacy that you talk so much about in the book?
Yeah, futures thinking to me is a way, well, it's a methodology. It's a way to explore the trends around us and explore the future scenarios in a very strict way. So there are a number of workshops. So futures thinking is quite literally thinking about the future. And we do that in a structured way with a number of workshops, with a process, with some mind-bending techniques. So that's the robust approach and methodology, whereas futures literacy is an ability. It's the ability to think critically and abstractly about the future. And some of the key building blocks for that is talking about anticipation and talking about assumptions. What do we assume when we make decisions? What is our anticipation about the future? And that's why the book is also called Anticipatory Leadership, that leadership who masters both the literacy and the strictness of these workshops and how to approach that. So futures thinking, it roughly said, futures thinking is a toolbox, and futures literacy is the capability to know how to use the toolbox and to know why. That's how I differ between them.
Great. And that sounds like something that would be very useful for leaders and in any organizations, but I'm sure there are challenges when it comes to thinking. So yeah, could you share what some of those challenges are when we're applying futures thinking insights a said company?
One of the massive challenges with doing that is people are not used to doing this. They are not used to think about what will happen if blah, 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 blah. How can we imagine something unfold? How can we talk about futures that do not exist? Future, and it's a very strange thing to say, but the future only exists in our imagination. It only exists in how we talk about anticipation and what might be. So the whole idea of training us in a leadership team to think about things that do not exist, yes, is unfamiliar to us. Then there is the challenge of having the time to carving out 3 hours in a day or 3 hours during a month or period to actually sit down and think about the future or the futures. The third thing is that normally when people think about futures thinking or work with that, they may be thinking about, okay, what goes on with the organization on grand scale, on global scale, with the global trends around us. And we're thinking about those futures on a time scale of maybe 10 years or 15 or 20 years. What will happen in that time span? So what I try to do is to make the time very smaller, to maybe think about 3 years from now and not 10 or 20 years, and make the ecosystem that we work with smaller. So not the organization in the market, but look at your business unit or your team. So how will that actually happen inside your team? And those are the challenges: to make the time small enough, to make the scope small enough, to understand where the trends come from and how we talk about them, and then getting into that familiar literacy of thinking and talking about futures that do not exist. Those are things that we need to train and work with.
Yeah, it's never easy to talk about the future, is it? Especially when you don't know what's coming.
So true, it's never easy, and it's all in our heads. It's all imaginations. It is storytelling. It is drawing some small pieces of paper. It's a skill that we need to train and to hone.
Absolutely. Okay, but what changes in the organizations once we start using futures thinking inside it?
I think as I said before, there's something about having the right scope and the right timeline when we work with that. But what changes mostly is actually who is involved in this. So who is engaged in doing futures thinking inside an organization is different from when we use it on the outside of the organization. Typically, and I know this is may not apply to every organization, but typically doing something like strategy or strategic foresight or working with the market powers and with trends on global scale is something that is handled by the strategy department or by top leaders or by the board of directors. So a few percentages of the people in an organization. But when we work with futures thinking inside an organization, the number of people who can use this is just way bigger. And the number of people that we engage in this is way bigger. So it really changes who is involved. And then it in turn changes what they feel about being involved in strategy, in tactics. Because from being part of shaping your own future, you become more hopeful. You get ownership of the solution and the future. You get more confident and you start to activate the agency. So those are some of what really changes. It's mostly about who actually is involved in these processes.
Fascinating. And now I would like to have a quick discussion about the title of the book, Anticipatory Leadership. So, Eric, what's that kind of leadership?
That leadership, well, that I think there's two answers to it. One is the approach, and the other is the mindset. So let's split them apart. The approach in that is forward-looking, futures-thinking approach to uncertainty and exploration and playfulness and how to effectively explore and evaluate both the trends and the scenarios. So there's something about the rigor and the process and the methodology that is in that box. And we do that in order to design and drive our transformations. So anticipatory leadership, one answer is about methodology. The other is about our mindset, our approach to actually spending time in the future and using that to make decisions today. The mindset of being playful, the mindset of being imaginative, the mindset of exploring something getting the emotional response to it, and then saying, okay, this is a good future or a bad future, and how can we use those emotional responses to make decisions today? That's anticipatory leadership.
And what are the capabilities of that leadership? What type of skills leaders need to have?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I just touched briefly upon them. Playfulness is a part of it. So playing around with futures, playing around with, like, actually literally building a future in Lego, using Lego bricks to imagine a future. So playfulness is a part of it. Then there's another P that's called possibilism, being able to see not only the optimistic or the pessimistic, but see the possibilities in a trend unfolding, being AI or whatever it is that might unfold, seeing the possibilities. There's a third P in this. It's funny, it's three P's. It's being plastic. And by that, I mean having strong opinions, but also being able to shift opinions to another view. It could be your view, Taya, that I listen to you, and then I say, okay, your idea might be better than mine. So I'm plastic. I can change how I see the world. So possibilism and plasticity and playfulness are three of the vital elements in that. There's one more that I think we need to talk about, and that is being able to sense what goes on in an organization. And that's not something that we are normally trained in. Many of us, I'm an engineer, I'm trained in solving problem. I'm not trained in sensing what goes on inside me or goes on around me in the organization. But that capability or skill or trait of actually sensing and being able to put words on what I sense, so that we can use that for sense making, making solution. But sensing is a vital part of it.
Yeah, I think that's very profound because when you say sensing, I think most people, they don't think that's something that could be trained. You're either born with it or not. So do you believe that this can be trained?
Yes, I do. When you start paying attention to it, to see what are you sensing right now? What are you sensing in your leadership team? What are you sensing in your organization? What is going on that you have like this gut feeling of, or the soul feeling of, that we need to talk about? I know people who are very, very good at this, who intuitively have this sense of, okay, I can sense something is going on in the IT department or in HR. We need to have a talk with them. What's going on? What are the trends? So some people have it, and the more that you talk about it, the more you put focus on it, the better you are at pulling out those little pieces that we actually sensing something going on.
Interesting. Well, okay, and then how can leaders develop the other three capabilities or skills that you mentioned?
Yeah, the stupid answer is by doing it. It's something about, okay, let's try. Let's engage ourselves in the storytelling about a future that does not exist. Let's imagine that AI unfolds in this way in HR. What will that day be for an HR worker, for an HR professional with AI helping us? So storytelling, imagination, playing these what if games. What will happen if this happens and this happens and this happens? So there's that kind of learning it by doing it. I call it action learning. That's the best way. Just say, okay, we need to train this. The training program is building the capability over months of engaging in this. So on a monthly basis in your leadership team, we take turns in bringing something that we found on the internet. I found this Google Glass. Let's play around with what will happen if everybody in our leadership team at a meeting has Google Glasses, where we get subtitles on the inside of the glasses that translate or give me head ups about what we should talk about next. What will happen if? So we can develop these skills by engaging in some of these workshops that I write about in the book, and slowly by that we get more and more aware of the capabilities.
One interesting question just came up to my mind, Tarek, is Do people need to be put in a special conditions to think about those kind of things that are not something that you would usually do on a day-to-day basis as part of your job? Or would it work if they just stay in their usual office space, or would it be better if they go out on places that they don't visit that often? How does it work? How could you come up with those ideas that don't even exist at the moment?
Yeah, great question. Ultimately, the best way to do it is, as you said or alluded at, to do something that is abrupt from your daily life. Preferably go away from your office, maybe go into a park, into the forest, somewhere where you are disrupted from your daily life. And then you get into the mindset of getting familiar with futurist literacy and thinking abstractly about the future. And by that process, you get into the mode of being of working with futures thinking. That's the ultimate goal or the ultimate way. But you can do that in smaller steps. You can do that in your office, in your leadership team, in your normal room. But then you need to go into the mental stage of, okay, let's put away our phones. Let's switch mental gears, not thinking about what is in our mailbox, not thinking about what's in our calendar. Not thinking about what we're going to do next week, but let's jump into a mental space where we think about the future. So that mental shift is something that you can train, and you can do that in a way where the leadership team gets into this ritual. Now we go and we jump into the future, put away our phones, and then you can do that as you are. So there's a grayscale between those two options, either jumping to the forest or jumping mentally to that. So there's some steps between that.
Absolutely great. Very interesting. Thanks for that. In the book, you talk about the emotional impact of using futures thinking. So, what is that impact, Eric?
I talked about it briefly earlier on. There are four emotional impacts that I can see that come out from doing these. First of all, doing the mental jumps into a future, but also being part of planning the process for getting the roadmap, for example. Those four are hope, ownership, confidence, and agency. So let's unpack those four. Hopefulness. First of all, I have seen it a number of times when we have these workshops or journeys or programs with futures thinking, either in a half day or full day or 5 months, that because people are part of understanding what might happen, they get more hopeful, even though the future might be bad or might be good or might be plausible or possible. They are hopeful because they have, as they say, quote unquote, I have been to the future. I have an idea of what might happen if that future unfolds. So they are hopeful. They are not that nervous or anxious about what might happen because they have explored both the good and the bad futures. So that kind of hope, it will all be good because I have been to the future. Second, ownership. Because people have been to the future and they have been part of shaping how they would like their future to unfold, they actually start owning both the future and the way there. Because I have been part of it. We have listened to maybe 100 nurses in a hospital. We have involved them in shaping a future. So they start owning that future. I want to be part of it. I have been part of shaping it. I own the future. And then that comes the third output, which is confidence. People start saying, I believe in this because I am part of shaping both the future and the roadmap to get to that future. And lastly, that leads into agency. I can act. I can do something about it. It's not just only. Well, somebody said to me very, very nicely last week, you cannot control the weather. That's true. But there are some things that you can control where you can act. You can, for example, you can accept that you get wet. You can accept that it's sunny. You can pull out an umbrella. You can put better clothes on if the weather is bad. You can act. You can move to some other place where it's not raining. So you actually have agency. You can do something. And it's so wonderful when we do these futures thinking journeys that those four things appear: hopefulness and ownership, and confidence and agency, the willingness or the ability to act.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting, and especially in the book as well, to read about the impact that thinking about the future have on us. So, Eric, I just have one final question to end this fascinating conversation. So, are you positive about the future of business and leadership?
That's a good question. From the people that I work with, I sense that the people in the middle of the organizations are more negative than the top leaders are at the moment. And it's really interesting paradox that that the people in the organizations see the future with very different glasses, with either optimistic or pessimistic. I think it boils down to how much agency these people have in their organization. If we end up having a good control of how artificial intelligence unfolds, then I think we are on the way to a good future. If we end up having a good approach to climate change, where we get more people engaged in it, and where we have some good technological breakthroughs, then I think we are on a good path there. So right now I'm a bit more pessimistic than I am optimistic. Normally I'm a very optimistic person and I see the options. I'm a possibilist, but that's maybe where we should end it. I am a possibilist, and I believe that if we work together, and if more people embrace futures thinking and futures literacy in schools, in workplaces, in governments, in healthcare, as politicians, then we are better off engaging people, then we are better off having agency, and we can do something on it.
I really like that message. The predictions might not be so optimistic, but if we work together, we can always change that. Yeah,
That's
it's a
absolutely
great
right.
message to end this conversation on.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Erica. It was a great pleasure to speak with you today about your new book, and I would encourage our listeners to grab a copy to read more. But thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.